greedy or free. See blue skies and think of sea. How are you doing?
Censored Radio Free America.
Rick Adams is on.
And we are our midweek edition of Uncensored Radio Free America. And we promised you we'd have a very interesting show tonight, as I think we do every night. And we will get into that in just a few moments. Friday night we have planned an interview program with an individual who has been writing for some time now about election fraud and how elections can be rigged, how they can be set up, and how touchscreen voting is a very dangerous thing. We have taken a big leap backward in voting, elections, machines, and he's going to talk to us about what can be done to save our elections, if in fact that can be done. Kurt Hyde will be our guest Friday night on the program. Tomorrow night we're going to be spending a little bit of time, I hope, on Kevin Franz's 73 questions. Questions that make you think. And they are rhetorical sometimes. They are questions which I think will make you wonder about what country you're living in. But they do have answers. And we'll see if we can discuss some of those 73. Obviously, not all, but we will discuss some of them. All right. Right now, we are going to welcome back, by very popular demand, the invulnerable, the inevitable, the absolutely and totally irresistible expert on many, many subjects pertaining to everything from banking and banks, money, and medicine, none other than Eustace Mullins. Good evening, Eustace.
Oh, good evening. It's nice to be on your show again.
Well, thank you.
I talk about so many things because I run into the same gang of criminals no matter what subject I go to.
Boy, isn't that the truth, huh?
That's not that I'm spreading myself too thin. It's just that I run into the same criminals, the same gang, and the same names. Yeah. Whether I go into medicine or politics or
mm-hmm.
banking
mm-hmm.
or government, it's the same people.
And we got a pretty good idea as to who some of those people are.
Oh, yeah.
you've been naming names for a long time.
Yes.
mm-hmm. Now, Eustace, we like to welcome you back to the program from time to time because you certainly are a wealth of knowledge. And as I like to tell people, you were there, been there, done that. You were alive at a time when many of us were still dreams in our parents' eyes, and we just weren't even around when you were living in a country that seemed to be quite different from the country we're living in today. And
well,
that's what's so worth.
Over most people, because
mm-hmm.
I got my education in insane asylum.
Yeah.
Not many people can brag of that.
Right. Well, I think we're living in an insane asylum today.
Well, that's what Ezra Pound said when he went back to Italy. He said, all America is an insane asylum.
Yeah. Well, I don't think there'd be many people who would argue with Ezra Pound or you on that at all.
He was never challenged on that statement. The reporter absolutely was dumbfounded when he said that.
He's just plain dumb. All right, Eustace Mullins, stay tuned. We'll be back. Get on the line. Eustace will talk to you tonight about many subjects. I'm Rick Adams, Radio Avenger. We will take your calls, and we'll get right into the program in 3 minutes. Stay tuned for more.
BATF
the program with Eustace Mullins. Jump aboard, and tonight we'll be at some point asking you a question, ladies and gentlemen, to which, if you get the right answer, you will win a copy of the new book, The Minutemen, with Jerome Corsi and Jim Gilchrist as the authors of this book on the destruction of America's borders and security. And that of course, Eustace Mullins, I'm sure, can speak about as well from his years of experience. These international bankster gangsters, Eustace, one of their goals is the total internationalizing of this country, turning it into an appendage of the New World Order, right?
Oh, yes, indeed. But the bankers are not too happy right now because they're winding down a war, and that's a very sad day for them.
You mean they can't make as much money as they've made? Is that what
Well, they can't keep the show going. Iraq
okay.
is over. Everybody admits that the Iraq situation is ended.
Now, is that because they plan this expansion of war in the Middle East, or is that just because they've given up? What do you think?
Well, they haven't really given up, but you see, Iraq, the opening curtain for a domino situation of knocking off Syria, Iran, and Saudi Arabia. And so we got stuck in Iraq, and that was the end of the whole deal.
You know, one thing is for certain, regardless of what they intended, and we know they intended evil right from the beginning, but, you know, the fact of the matter is we had been saying just about every expert who understood anything about the Middle East would agree that you never can go in and occupy a country where there is such a hatred for imperialism and occupation, right?
Well, they're real nationalists over there. Mm-hmm. They're all nationalists in every country in the Middle East, and so that's what you got to deal with.
Yeah, you don't just go into Iraq, and even though there are divisions there, there is unification against the U.S. imperialism and U.S. aggression occupation. And that was a given. I mean, you didn't have to be a rocket scientist or have five PhDs in geopolitics to know that. I knew that. You knew that. Most
okay.
everybody else knew that. How come they didn't know that, or did they?
Well, they didn't know that. Our Department of State has never worked with the Arab people because they're 100% pro-Israel, so they have no understanding of the Arab people.
Uh-huh. So they've just ignored them, and they've just totally been ignorant of their ways and their desires. Is that what you mean?
Oh, yes. And none of them ever spoke Arabic. The Middle Eastern desk in the Department of State never had anybody that spoke Arabic because they have such contempt for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like it's come back to bite us in the butt.
Well, it has indeed. It's right there biting right now.
Uh-huh. And, of course, it's not just in that part of the world, but other parts of the world where the U.S., under the boot, if you will, of the internationalist globalists, has met with resistance in any country where we've tried to impose ourselves. And, you know, it's interesting, you and I were talking the other night privately. We still occupy Japan. Now, we still occupy Germany.
Absolutely, because there's no resistance there. The Germans and the Japanese are very much like us in many ways,
mm-hmm.
and they have no resistance to us whatsoever. But that is not true of the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, apparently not. I mean, the Muslim population, the Arabs in general, not all, but most, are not taking kindly to anyone coming in and breaking up their particular picnic.
No,
that's
indeed.
For sure.
And these are old empires. They go back 6,000 years. You don't walk into a place like that and take it over.
So, now, as far as the waking up, if you will, do you think bankers and the criminals, the villains in all of this, the people behind the politicians, behind Bush and Cheney, the real big banks and so forth, do you think they are going to just take a little moment of a respite here, regroup, regather, and then think over their strategy and move forward, or what? What do you think is their next game plan?
Well, they haven't got any strategy. They still have the original program, the domino Iraq, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Syria. And they're stuck. They have no strategy whatsoever.
You don't think they... All right, so there, you don't think there is a plan for Iran?
Oh, there is no plan. No, no, they're not going to Iran.
Uh-huh.
We have not a chance of going into Iran. We haven't got any army and any money to go into Iran.
And what about a preemptive military nuclear strike?
Oh, that's already been done because, well, Israel blew up Saddam Hussein's nuclear operation with American planes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been no nuclear operation in Iraq since then.
What about Iran and their alleged nuclear ambitions?
Well, I really don't know. I don't know that much about it because that's still shrouded in mystery. Nobody knows exactly what they've got.
And so if they do, what's the big deal? What do we care? I mean, what business is it of the United States to dictate to other countries that they must keep their genie in their bottle, if I may use that expression? Only us and other nations, including Red China, a sworn enemy of the American public, and Israel, what right do they have to have supremacy in nuclear operations? You know, that's my question.
Oh, yes, that's a good question. And the fact is that China and Japan are more concerned about Korea's nuclear operations than we are.
You think that Red China is really concerned, or is that a good front right now, Houston?
Well, it could be a front, but
yeah.
There's no question that they have some concern.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the funny thing is, as we've said so much on this program, who really built China? And, you know, we were just talking about this today, Scott Smith, my co-host, and myself on the TV program that we do, The Deadly Experiment, about China would never, ever have been a threat to anyone today had it not been for World War II and had it not been for the traitors, Soviet agents, running the entire operation of the federal government during the 1930s on. That never would have happened without those traitors.
It would not have happened. And Joe McCarthy said all along, who's responsible for giving China away?
Yeah.
And he was the only one who raised the question in Washington.
Yeah, and can you imagine that? I mean, a common sense question, and it took going with the courage of McCarthy to come along and ask the question, and then to pursue the question, and what do? They turn the focus not on Red China and on the infiltration of the United States government. These idiots in Congress, these traitors, they turn their attention on him, and they went after him.
They drove him out of Washington.
What's that?
They drove him out of Washington.
Well, they, you know, as we know, I mean, he met with an early demise. And
he certainly did.
Yeah.
And I've been at his gravesite and have been shown his death certificate, his homicide.
Mm-hmm.
They gave me a copy of that death certificate.
I have no doubt about that. And, you know, the character assassination was all they wanted to stick.
That's
and when they character assassinate somebody, they don't want them to live so they can clear the record and fight back. They want that mantra to hold on. And that's what they've done. We have the most corrupt media organs, I think, in the world today. They talk about Russia and China and the communists. Look, we know what they are there, organs of the state. But in this country, we have the idea that we have freedom of the press. And in fact, we don't. We have freedom for the press. There's a big difference, Eustace, isn't there?
Oh, there certainly is. It's a different world.
You were in Washington, and you saw the press. You saw the New York Times, how they operated, really, since the 1920s.
Well, even though I was right there in the national press all the time, I still had no idea how it operated. It was a closed shop.
Mm-hmm. You couldn't get in unless
you
were connected.
No, you couldn't get in. Absolutely not. And my friend George Simpson, who founded the press club, he had totally divorced himself from that whole bunch.
Yes, indeed. And a guy like Walter Duranty comes up and is hired, told to go to Russia and put up a good front, good propaganda, make Russia look good, do everything you can to deceive the American public. And he did, and he wins a Pulitzer Prize.
Yes, indeed. And that was an unregistered foreign agent for Russia all the time. He was a New York Times correspondent.
Yeah, I'm not
and
surprised.
And many Times correspondents have done the same thing. Harrison Salisbury was an unregistered agent for Castro when he took over Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
He was his greatest staunchest advocate.
Yeah, and he had help from guys like Herbert Matthews in the New York Times.
They all worked together.
Mm-hmm. I remember Arthur Bliss Lane in his book, we're going all over the map, but it's the same subject, same enemy.
It's the same thing.
He wrote about Poland betrayed and what he saw.
Oh, he did indeed.
That's a tragedy.
Yes.
You know, and that's lost today in all of the media propaganda about Germany and Poland and during World War II, how the Polish were betrayed so incredibly viciously, and it all happened with the United States connivance.
It did, indeed. And Katyn Forest remains one of the greatest atrocities of World War II.
And it was committed by our good buddies, Joe Stalin's men, huh?
Good old Joe. That's true. Used to call him good old Joe.
Good old Uncle Joe, as FDR, fraudulent deficit Roosevelt, called him. All right, you stay there for the break. Eustace Mullins, our guest. Jump aboard. We'll take your calls at 1-800-313-9443. Right here on RBNLive.com. Give us a call. And we are back. Our guest is none other than Eustace Mullins. Eustace, of course, has a rich background of involvement with many interesting people in Washington, and as he mentioned, author Ezra Pound was one of his great mentors, and actually, I guess originally, the book The Secrets of the Federal Reserve, Eustace, was an idea commissioned by him, was it, or no?
Ezra Pound only commissioned one book by another writer in his entire life, and he commissioned me to write the book on the Federal Reserve System.
And what made him do that, Eustace? Why did he pick...
Well, he'd been working on it all his life, international banking and the central banks of Europe.
Uh-huh.
And this was a chance to bring it all together. And he was locked up in the insane asylum, and he couldn't go to the library to check it out. So he just had me go over and do it myself.
He handed it over to you.
Yes, indeed.
And then you compiled information that originally was in the U.S. Library of Congress, I believe, right?
Official government documents. In fact, everything in that book is an NFL. An official government document.
And that got you into a little bit of trouble, I guess, huh?
Well, I got fired from the Library of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
The only person ever fired from the Library of Congress, despite a distinction.
And what was the claim, by the way, for those new listeners?
Well, the
claim was that what? You were a criminal? You were stealing things from the government, or what?
No,
What was the hoax they perpetrated on you?
Ezra got me a press credentials as the... American representative of the Social Credit newspaper of England.
Mm-hmm.
And this was very much anti-central bank, but they have their own money system, social credit.
Mm-hmm.
And so they went after me on that. That's why I got fired.
Well, it doesn't sound like it made any sense to me.
Well, it didn't make any sense. They didn't offer any evidence against me of any kind.
And, of course, in those days, you didn't have the kind of defense attorneys... or action you would have today in litigating and counter-litigating.
Oh, no, there was no litigation. I did sue the Library of Congress after I got fired, but of course the court threw it right out.
Naturally. They got nowhere. Right, right. And now, Sheldon Emery also, and some people might know that name, one of the people involved in the identity movement, got involved in his own opportunity for writing about the Federal Reserve, and he wrote the book about... what was it, billions for banks and debts for the people?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You remember that?
Oh, yes. In fact, I stayed in Sheldon's house at his Phoenix after he passed away. He died very young, unfortunately. But I knew his son his son-in-law and daughter very well, and I used to stay out there.
That was an excellent booklet that I remember reading in the 1970s.
There are millions of them that circulated.
And it's obvious that these conspirators who met at Jekyll Island, these guys didn't want the American public to know exactly what they were going to be in store for. Yet years before you came along and on the scene in the 40s and 50s, didn't we have a guy by the name of Lindbergh speak out about the Federal Reserve System?
Oh, Charles Lindbergh led the fight in Congress against the Federal Reserve Act in 1913.
And he said that once this act was consummated, that we would have engineered depressions, recessions, and so on.
He called it the greatest trust in history, exactly what it was.
Yep.
In fact, they had a Pujo committee investigate the bankers while they were studying the Federal Reserve and trying to get it passed. And the Pujo committee came to the same conclusion as the gigantic conspiracy.
Well, it pretty well had to be, and the American public was unsuspecting, totally ignorant.
Or totally unaware that anything was going on.
Yeah. I mean, but we had, prior to that, these engineered crises. I believe it was the silver panic in the 1890s.
Oh, we had that. They came one after another, rapid succession. And 1893, then
Right.
1907. That was all staged.
Now, President McKinley, interestingly enough, was also assassinated, as you know.
Yes, indeed.
And I believe it was over this issue of resisting the Federal Reserve.
He was ready to torpedo the upcoming Federal Reserve Act because he was aware of what it was and what it meant. And he was going to fight it.
Yeah.
He never got a chance to do it.
From Lincoln to McKinley and Kennedy and a few in between, we could probably throw Warren Harding in there, too.
Oh, yes, Harding died. Well, I was told the other day, a friend of mine was chatting with me, and he said, don't you know the thing that happened with Harding, his strange heart attack? He said he was going after the Bolsheviks.
That's right.
And he was determined to make war on them.
No, he was. His his Attorney General Doherty?
Harry Doherty, yes.
Harry Doherty, yeah. And he was doing exactly that until the so-called Teapot Dome scandal, similar in a way to Watergate scandals, brought down his whole administration. And then, as you point out, he died rather prematurely.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, these guys realized what was going on in this country and the Mensheviks and the Bolsheviks from Russia, Eastern Europe, coming right over to America, gaining a foothold in this country courtesy of the super-rich totalitarian socialist bankers.
Well, John D. Rockefeller himself sent that gang to Russia in 1917 to engineer the Bolshevik Revolution.
And bring them here, brother.
And bring them here. Rockefeller put up the money for it.
All right. Stay tuned, Eustace. We got a quick break, and we're going to go to the phones. Take your calls, 1-800-313-9443. Always fascinating to talk to the present, not late, but early, Eustace Mullins. All right, we'll be back. Rick Adams, stay tuned.
First step in winning the war, spreading the word. Tell your friends Rick Adams is on RBNLive.com.
And speaking of the whole Federal Reserve conspiracy, I might want to remind you now that Aaron Russo's movie is now available on RBNLive.com. Give us a call if you wish, during the day, to order your copy. It's just $19.95 plus $4.95 shipping and handling. Call us at 1-800-724-2719, and the movie will shake you out of your boots. No question about that. And don't forget, continue to support RBNLive.com, our pledge drive, our contributions to keep the network rolling along, doing what it's doing. Programs like this. And let's begin now with Roger in Pennsylvania. Hello, Roger.
Yeah, thanks, gents. Eustace, I had something I've been wanting to ask you like about forever now. If I could share a little, I thought it was pretty funny earlier today on Mark Denkoff's show here on the brilliant RBN network. And that was his guest related about this bit of a bumper sticker. Hopefully everyone understands. I barely dipped my noodle in The Hobbit some umpteen years ago. The storyline has the valiant and diminutive Frodo trying to keep the evil Sauron from getting the ring or assembling all three rings together or something like that, where he would garner all this power. And the bumper sticker is something like, "Get Frodo, Bush has the ring."
And that's the question you wanted to ask Eustace?
No.
What's the question?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good anyway.
Yeah, it is. It's funny.
I wanted to ask, and if I can preface this, Eustace, by stating, I think there is zero dishonor in doing contract writing for hire.
Well, I've never done that yet in my life.
Well, think a little first, because it came out that, and I combined this with, I've been trying to do about a year, my Pat Robertson, the big fat liar, because, and the motive for the lie is the most important thing, not the lie itself, but the motive, is what I've got to get to here. And now, when he came out with his book, The New World Order.
Well, that was a ripoff from my book. I know the guy that ghostwrote it for him.
Oh, a ripoff from your book.
And the ADL attacked him for using my material. They started working with me.
I remember at the time, I used to watch the show fairly regularly. I didn't trust him back then, but he had it that he was slaving at a hot typewriter every day for a year. I mean, this was his...
He never wrote a word of that book.
This was his magnum opus, you know.
Yeah.
Now, this is even better than I thought. But it's fundamental... Now, this is important to point out. Some people miss this, is that it is fundamentally immoral, a lie. He could have done it as, say, an editor of a collective work. That would have been honorable itself.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't do that. And the motive for the lie is most interesting. The review in the New American had it that reads like it was written by a committee, which was apparently the case.
It was the case.
Even unintentional contributors now as well. Now the motive, of course, is Pat Robertson. I mean, here he is getting this, not only the direct line from God, which is even more offensive, but wanting to present the image that he is also exhaustively knowledgeable.
Yes, indeed. He loves to make that pose.
This is even better than I thought. But, there he is, every night, it is interesting that they're serving up all these words of knowledge, and apparently God never once sees fit to take a day off from delivering all these healings from hiccups in the liver and whatnot. And then that... Even that, not Terry Mewson, I guess, has been there the last few years. Well, I wouldn't know. I didn't see the last year. But they're still serving up all these words of knowledge. And the previous female co-host there, in her own book, has it that she was whacked out insane out of her mind the last 2 years she was on that show delivering all those words of knowledge. But thanks for sharing that with us. Excuse me, because I thought, you might be honor bound not to, to honor your contract there.
Oh, and, I never had any contract with him whatsoever. No,
yeah.
I went to college with Pat Robertson. We were fairly good friends in college because he wasn't into the religious business at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And now later years, when the Federal Reserve began to be very popular, Pat started talking about the Federal Reserve on his program, but he never once invited me on that show. And so he finally invited another friend of mine, Lindsay Williams, to appear on his show and talk about the Federal Reserve system.
Uh-huh.
And I was the one that had written a book on it, and Pat had a personal connection with me through our school years, and he never once asked me to be on the show, and I never asked him to be on the show.
Yeah. I find even on the network here sometimes people beating up on him for the wrong things, a little carping. Some petty baloney about, wanting to have Cesar Chavez knocked off.
Well, they always beat up on Pat for the wrong things. They never go after him for what he's really doing.
Yes.
God bless you all.
All right, Roger. Thank you very much for that call. Did you know personally ever meet Taylor Caldwell in the 50s?
No, I didn't know. I've heard a lot about her, and a lot of people admire her and ask me if I ever met her. She was a little before my time.
But, Taylor Caldwell was a brilliant novelist. And,
oh, she certainly was.
She also had made the mistake of becoming very, she was anti-communist right from the beginning.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She was blacklisted because she was a friend of Joe McCarthy's. And the New York Times
panned her books, Something Awful, when she wrote under her own name, and yet when she wrote under a pseudonym, her books were widely praised. But, of course, we know that doesn't happen, does it? The left doesn't do things like that, do they?
No, no. But she definitely was blacklisted, and she was a fine writer.
Yep. Yep, and, you know, the late Dan Smoot, whom I rely on heavily for much of the research that he did into the Constitution, was also quite friendly with her and did some yeoman work, and her efforts were just fabulous in what she did, writing novelly, but also nonfiction. She wrote a number of articles.
Oh, she was writing all the time. But yep. You know, Dan Smoot was the protege of H.L. Dunn.
Yes.
I put up the money for Smoot's operation.
Yep. And Clarence Mannion and Dean Mannion's list.
Dean Mannion.
And others who were, you know, scholars in their own right of the Constitution. And all of them were trying to alert America a long time ago to what many are just discovering today. Many of our listeners, young people. Today that come aboard and learn about what's going on, understand now, and then don't realize that this has been going on for a long time, and there were voices in America like these people who were warning Americans years ago what was to befall us if we didn't do what we should have done, and we didn't. We didn't listen to the prophets. We didn't listen to the elders and those who were warning us, did we?
No, we didn't, and they were very dedicated people. Dan Smoot, I just missed Dan Smoot. I went to work for H.L. Hunt when Dan retired.
Yeah, yes. Indeed. All right, let's take more calls for our guest, Eustace Mullins, 1-800-313-9443, Logan in Oklahoma. Hello, Logan.
Hey, how's it going?
Yes, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. I had a question about the Federal Reserve System and what if it comes to the point where it is done away with or, you know, something happens traumatic with that. And
hey, ask Eustace directly. Go ahead.
Okay, Eustace. And what do you think will happen, you know, whenever something does happen dramatically with the Federal Reserve System? What do you think will happen with, I guess, you know, barter systems, or what do you think may happen?
Oh, no, it won't be a barter system, but the Federal Reserve System, I've said for years, people ask me when the collapse is coming, and I said it will come when the Federal Reserve stops printing counterfeit money. And that's all that's keeping the country going today is counterfeit money.
What do you do to prepare to whenever that happens?
Well, I guess it's hard to say what you do to prepare, because when they switch from counterfeit money to real money, which you have to do at some time, then it's going to cause a lot of transition. But exactly what's going to happen, I don't know.
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks for the input, and yeah, I love the show.
Thank you, Logan. Appreciate it. A follow-up to Logan's question, though. Last night, this subject came up with our guest, and that is the way we have become so much a part of the world system now, so much part of this.
Oh, yeah, the system, that's right.
Right, and that means the money system, the monetary system worldwide, that we could not just get out of it even if we wanted to without having a tremendous ramifications. Do you feel that would be the case, and do you think we could survive it?
Well, there can be big monetary changes, and they can get through without too much trouble. You see, that happened in Germany when we gave the Soviets our money plates for printing German marks, and they managed to make that transition very easily, and it wasn't a great deal of upsetting. So it can be done with less travail than you would think.
Tell us about that, about the money plates that were given the Soviets. Tell us exactly when that happened and how that happened.
Oh, that happened with Harry Dexter White. You see, President Roosevelt had three personal assistants who were all KGB agents, and they were Harry Dexter White, who was worked with Henry Morgenthau as the Department of Treasury, and Alger Hiss, and Lachlan Curry. All three were KGB agents, and those were the only people who had Roosevelt's ear at all times were these three KGB agents.
Some of my best friends are communists.
Yeah. Well, all of my best friends were communists. That was with Roosevelt.
And he was, too. Yes, go ahead.
And all of Eleanor's best friends were communists.
Eleanor, yeah. Or lesbian.
Eleanor only knew the true blue communists. She did not know any fake communists. They were all real.
and she probably bedded with many of them, females.
Joe Lash and quite a few of them, she did.
Many of them were female. I mean, most of them
were female. All
female,
yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's true because her friends were primarily of the same sex. But
yeah.
I guess you would call same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Franklin had to build her a love nest for three of her girlfriends. Val Kill, I think it was called that, Hyde Park. And Eleanor actually lived with her three girlfriends in the separate house.
I can't say I blame FDR for that. I mean, you know, I can blame him for everything else, but not that.
Well, you'd have to be a very understanding husband, but wife.
Or blind.
Husband,
yes.
To put up with something like that.
Yes. Or blind, yeah. All right. All right.
Well, he was not blind, but.
Let's go back to the phones. Eustace Miles has a great sense of humor as well as a rich intellect, as you can hear. And let's take Ann in New Mexico. Hello, Ann. You're on the air.
Hi, Rick.
Hi.
Thank you for having Eustace on.
No, we have him on as often as we can, and that's not often enough.
Hi, Eustace.
Hello there.
It's an honor to speak with you.
Well, thank you. I'm always glad to be on the show.
Are you familiar with Lysander Spooner?
Oh, yes. Spooner did great work.
He wrote this outrageous but so true essay written in 1869 called No Treason. And in it, I'll just quote one sentence. Let me see if I can find it. The men, in other words, the Federal Reserve, who loan money to government, so-called, for the purpose of enabling the latter, meaning the government, to rob, enslave, and murder their people, are among the greatest villains that the world has ever seen. And they deserve to be hunted and killed if they cannot otherwise be got rid of, as any slave traders, robbers, and pirates had ever lived. Now, I made a statement last night that we have an illegitimate government. Would you agree with that, Eustace?
Oh, yes, because when they violated the Constitution and turned the monetary system over to a privately owned bank, that betrayed the people, it betrayed the country, and betrayed the Constitution.
Yes, that was Edward Mandel House advising Wilson.
Oh, yes, he was just a Rothschild agent. And,
yes. And I think it goes back to the 14th Amendment when the coup occurred with the federal government incorporating and gathering all the power of the states, taking away the sovereignty. And then I heard a quote by Gore Vidal the other day saying that another coup occurred when 9/11. A coup occurred. Our government is now in a totalitarian mode of government.
Oh, very much so.
Yes. And now my question to you is, what can we do? How do we cut the head off of the Federal Reserve? How do we stand up to this government? And would you say that a military coup might be in order?
Well, a military coup or provisional government would be a logical thing to do at this point because things are just going to get worse as long as we continue on the same course.
Right.
As long as this private bank has usurped the government of the United States, we don't have much of a chance of doing anything serious about it.
But, so where do you see it going then if that doesn't happen? Down the road to slavery?
Well, there'd be more government control and more slavery and more coups.
My timer is going off here.
We hear that.
Yeah.
At least that explains it.
I have something in the oven.
No, my. I hope it's food.
It stopped. Yeah,
all right.
Food, no problem. Now, what did you say, Eustace? I missed that. About further slavery and what?
Coup d'etats and so on.
Oh, military coups. You've got to take into consideration coups because coups are a very important way of getting through a problematical period, which we're in at the present time. And
a coup will help
set things up.
Tonight I was over at my neighbor's house briefly, and there were the people, creating the Matrix on television, telling their vision, their lie. It was Zbigniew, I can't pronounce his name.
Zbigniew Brzezinski.
Yeah, the grand chessboard, and then also some Walter Russell, somebody from the CFR, giving their version of Bush's speech tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to my neighbor, I said, they're just, all they're doing is programming the masses.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Well, you know, they have these great analysts come on that are owned by the same people, and then they give us their, shall we say, validation.
I know. Isn't it disgusting? It's just disgusting.
Well, they're always programming these people. They've been doing that for the last month, you know, telling us we're going to have a Democratic Congress now and that the Republicans go through. That's all nonsense.
It is.
Because they're in a dead heat, is the best thing you can say, and there is no Democratic Congress coming in.
No.
And even if there were, would it be any better than what we've got now, Eustace?
Well, it wouldn't.
Well, they sold out.
Well, they sold out.
What they've been trying trumpeting to everyone is that the Republicans are washed up, and they cite the Foley scandal and so forth, and that's all nonsense because the people don't even pay any attention to it.
Well, yeah. Thank you,
all right. Thank you, Ann, for your call, sister. All right. Amen.
Bye.
We'll be back with more, and Mark will be next in Colorado. Eustace Mullins, our guest, our line toll-free, 800-313-9443. Rick Adams, Radio Avenger. Be right back.
Get back at 'em with Rick Adams, the Radio Avenger, on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
And we are back with Eustace Mullins right now. We are going to take more calls, and we'll do that right away and talk to Mark in Colorado. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Rick. Excellent show, and it's an honor to be able to ask Eustace a question. It's great to be able to tap both of your accumulated knowledge. Straight to the point, as far as Fed Reserve and getting rid of them, Kennedy had printed up $4.8 billion in real money before his assassination, and shortly thereafter, this money was recalled. Have you ever come across, or was there a nuts and bolts plan ready to execute that Kennedy had and his administration had worked out? And is there any record, have you come across any evidence of that actual plan that he was attempting to hatch?
No, I've never seen any indications that there was such a plan or that he actually was planning to institute something like that. I don't think there was a plan, really.
I see, but there is record that he did have $4.8 billion printed up by the Treasury. Is that not correct?
Oh, yes. That was contracted for and was part of his program.
So from your understanding, he was just going to attempt to go for it, and I suppose meet each new challenge to the changeover as it came rather than having some elaborate plan.
No, it was not a very detailed plan at all, but they were ready to handle it. There's no question about that, but it was in their capability to work with such a plan.
I see. Well, thank you very much. I'll hang up and let somebody else get a question in. Again, great show. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mark, for calling. I got a follow-up question on the you know, we have that song somewhere in our repertoire here. We're going to try to find it. Oh, the Federal Reserve by Carl Klang. How in the world?
I've heard him sing that many times.
Well, that's just right up your alley. But here's the question, Eustace. How in the world did it ever become known as the Federal Reserve? I mean, how do they pull that one off on us?
Oh, Paul Warburg was a genius who came up with that title because it was a perfect title because it would lull the American people into thinking that they actually had their own banking plan. And
in other words,
such plan.
Use motherhood and apple pie and a little bit of euphemism.
That's sort of like
the Patriot Act, huh?
Yes, indeed.
Uh-huh. I mean, can you believe it? It's neither federal nor is it a reserve, and yet that's the name, the Federal Reserve. And
that's
if you
the
go,
name that Paul Warburg came up and it was a stroke of genius, no question.
Yeah, definitely.
It was the way it was sold. I don't know that Congress could ever have bought it.
Well, here they looked. I mean, as you know, with the silver panic and so forth, they create a problem.
Oh, yeah.
And then they come along and say, look, here's the solution, guys. All you got to do is just adopt a central banking system. It works well in Europe. Try it here. You'll love it. I mean, that's the line of nonsense. They peddled. And it worked.
It was.
They had the New York Times.
It was sold.
Sure, they had the media under their control, so obviously...
Oh.
Whenever the editorials would roll, it would be, yes, it's time for the Federal Reserve. Go back and look up your newspapers on microfilm, go back on microfiche, go back on the internet, and you can do this, and you can archive and go back to the New York Times editorials in 1912,
1911. Oh, yes, those would be very good to read right now.
I mean, they were selling this idea. They were telling us how wonderful it would be for the country. And little did the average American know, the media were bought and paid for by the very people that were going to save us from the system that they created. So, I mean, it's, you know, don't forget, there was no radio then. There was no television. It was just the print media. And they were virtually all bought and paid for by these banksters. All right, Eustace, stay where you are. And Betty will be next in North Carolina. You can join us, too. Hour number two coming right up with Rick Adams and Eustace Mullins. Stay tuned for more Uncensored Talk right here on RBNLive.com.
Live, uncensored.
America, another exciting, informative hour is warming up. Rick Adams is on fire.
Radio Avenger, the Paul Revere of talk radio. We're back with Eustace Mullins. And Eustace,
Radio Free.
Been around for a long time. How young are you these days, Eustace?
Oh, I'm only passing for 85.
85, my goodness. And the best is yet to come.
Oh, yeah.
As they just
well,
said.
I'm busier. I'm busier than I've ever been in my life.
Do you get a lot of exercise during the day? Do you jog? Do you do those things? Or what? What do you do?
I mostly walk. I don't jog.
Well, good for you. Jogging is not good.
No. I walk.
And you want to walk briskly.
And it's all hills where I am. So you're either going uphill or downhill.
Right, or Arthur Hill or somebody like that, right, okay, the actor. Well, that's good, because walking is indeed the better exercise.
Well, it's better for me, anyway.
It's better for anybody, because the jogging can be rough on the knees, the legs, the limbs.
Yeah, I've never done jogging.
No.
I think good. My knees were in worse shape if I actually had been jogging.
Yep. Walking is indeed a great exercise. That's good. Let's take Betty in North Carolina right now. Hello, Betty. You're on the program with Eustace Mullins.
Great honor to talk to both of you. Thank you. I'd like to see what you think of the Military Commissions Act and how it interrelates with the Disarmament Treaty and international law.
Yeah, you're familiar with the MCA, aren't you, Eustace? The Bill Bush just signed. What do you think of all this, how they react?
Well, I think the interaction is very forced, and it's not very constructive.
I would agree with that. Do you think that Bush is going to get away with a lot more now, or a lot more torturing and interrogation tactics?
No, indeed. I don't think he can do any more. He's doing all he can already.
Mm-hmm. You think his days are numbered?
Oh, yes. He's backing off everything right now. He's pulling his oar out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
And things can only go on so long. I remember during the Vietnam period when there was just several protests all over the country and people were fed up, you know. And it finally got to the crucial point, and that's when Johnson announced he wasn't going to run again, you know. And Bush is just about at that point. He's not going to run again, of course. But
that has two meanings, you know, possibilities.
Right.
I mean, maybe he won't have to run again. Maybe he'll be what Roosevelt wanted to be, dictator for life.
Well, no, he hasn't got that in him at all. Roosevelt enjoyed being a dictator.
Yeah.
I don't think Bush really enjoys being a dictator.
Well, because of all the blowback?
Oh, yes, the blowback. It's just too much heat for him.
Uh-huh.
And
that's an interesting perspective. Betty, go ahead, Betty. I didn't mean to interrupt you. You have another question or comment?
Yes, I sure had another question. The fact that this thing came up after the Supreme Court said that it would not be legal unless the Congress acted.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Congress acted.
Yes.
And the President signed it. And I don't see how the Supreme Court can go back and say, well, you know, the Congress acted, so it's not constitutional. even now.
No, and I mean, it's going to be challenged. And they'll have to rule again on it. And I mean, God help us.
How can they rule again when they said, you know, it's going to have to go through Congress? Well, it went through Congress. So
well, the whole idea.
Themselves?
Well, there's going to be a review, I'm sure, an original jurisdiction review. That's all that is that give us a bill that will pass constitutional muster is what they're saying.
I don't think so. I think they said if, you know, when they made the ruling, they said if the legislature authorizes it, then it will be fine.
Well, it's been signed, and it's there. It's on the books for now.
Well, one last question on the convoluted language.
All right, stay where you are, if you will. Betty, hold on. We'll take you when we come right back from our break. Eustace Mullins, our guest. Betty and Jim, you'll be next. Stay tuned for more.
Can man control his destiny? Change the shape of things to come.
Okay, we're back now with Eustace Mullins, and we still have Betty on the line. Yes, Betty, you wanted to ask another question.
Well, a last one, and I'm sorry to take this long.
No, that's all right.
Words like unlawful enemy combatant.
Yes.
Unlawful property. The Nuremberg Principles of 1950, where they're using terms like crimes against peace, and it's just absolute convoluted the way they're substituting words for our Bill of Rights.
And what is the question now?
Why are they substituting the words for the Bill of Rights? Is it so?
Well, why are they doing it? I think we don't have to go very far to figure that out, do we, Eustace?
Oh, no, because what they're doing is trying to cover up what they're really undermining the Constitution.
And that's exactly right. Exactly right. And that's providing an out for George Bush, you see, when he comes up for trial someday. And it's all under the cover of self-defense and national security. That's what he hopes to sell the American people on. National security. We've heard that before, haven't we?
Oh, we have indeed. It's been overdone so much that it's not much of a defense anymore.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, whose security is it that we're talking about?
I'm talking about his.
I guess so. Wouldn't you say, my dear?
Yes, indeed, and I sure do appreciate your discussing it with me.
Well, let me ask you this. While I have you on the line, I'm going to give away a copy of the book that we've been talking about, and I'd like to ask you, do you wish to get a copy, or would you like to forego it?
I'd love to have a copy.
The Minutemen. All right, let me ask you. I'm going to ask you a question. Let's see if you can get the right answer, all right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, the question is, this individual had to go before Richard Nixon was targeted for exiting from office. He was the vice president of the United States who was a threat at the time to the liberal establishment. What was that vice president's name?
It begins with an A.
That's the last name
Agassi.
Begins.
Yeah.
Excuse me?
What is it, Agassi or something?
You're close, but not quite. Do you remember? He was a vice president under Richard Nixon,
yes,
and he had to. He was the one that was charged with corruption going back to when he was governor of Maryland. And, of course, they knew the only way to deal with getting rid of Nixon was to get rid of Agnew first. They didn't want him to be president. So they went after him, dug up some old crap, and, of course, they managed to convict him.
Outrageous.
All right. Well,
Agnew was really...
What was his name?
Agnew.
You got it. Stay on the line, and we'll give you the book.
Thank you.
Spiro Agnew. All right. Thank you very much. Hang on. My producer will pick up off air. All right. Well, what did you think of Spiro Agnew, Eustace? Did you have any thoughts about him?
Well, he was definitely railroaded. He said all his life he was railroaded.
Yep.
Because they had no case against him. What they did, they went back and drug out. I think they was handled a contract, a building contract of some sort,
mm-hmm.
and they claimed it overcharged or something. But it was way back, and it was very vague, and I don't think they ever had any real evidence against him.
I know that they never really forgave him for when they had riots in Maryland, in the 60s, and he gave the order, I guess it was in the 60s, he gave the orders to shoot anybody who was looting or anybody who was killing or doing anything that was a felony during this time. And, of course, he was not forgiven for that, and because he was considered to be a racist. But, in fact, he said, I don't care who's doing the looting or shooting, we're not going to allow it in my area. And that was it.
Well, he was a pretty good governor of Maryland, actually, and he's well-liked.
Yeah.
I guess he was Greek, Cyril Agnew.
Yeah, yes, he was.
And he was, I think he was a very good person, but I think apparently a lot of people felt he was railroaded, but there weren't enough people to come to his defense.
No, and they knew that if they're going to get Richard Nixon, they had to get him first.
Oh, yes.
There was no doubt about that in my mind, and then we saw what happened with Ford and Rockefeller, didn't we?
Oh, certainly.
Uh-huh. Yep. And, of course, he was going to plan to be president, and that fell through. That didn't quite work out for Nelson, did it?
No, it didn't. And I don't think he ever got over that.
No, no. And the monkey wrench was there, and it wasn't meant to be. So that was at least that was some good news that we had during that time. Let's take another call. Jim in New York. Hi, Jim. You're on the program with Eustace. Hello, Jim.
Hello?
Here he is. Hi, Jim.
Okay. Yeah, that was a little delayed there.
Okay, Jim.
I just wanted to offer a partial solution. But before I did that, I wanted to pass along a couple of conversations that I had with senatorial staff. The first one was with Senator McCain's office on the subject of habeas corpus.
Yes.
And from that staffer, I was explaining that habeas corpus was intended of course, that the military was never meant to be used against the American people. That it was intended, and that the military is intended, to defend this country against foreign invasion. And his reply was, well, that's an interesting legal theory you have.
Uh-huh. He called it a theory, huh?
Right. The second one comes from Senator Ed Kennedy's office. I pointed out to that office that Mr. Kerry, this is back during the presidential election, I pointed out that Mr. Kerry was a Skull and Bones member, and they pointed out to me that I shouldn't worry about that.
Why is that?
Well, they didn't really go into any explanations.
I guess they have none.
You know, they were saying, "Oh no, don't worry about that. You don't need to worry about that."
I guess not. I guess they don't want you to think about that, do they?
No, they don't. I thought I'd pass along those two comments, and then here's the partial solution. I think that it's time for every person who is born in the United States of America to seriously consider their time and their resources and to consider every aspect of their life and ask themselves, are they using their resources, their time and their energy and their money to support this country or to support its destruction? I mean, for example, to me, anybody who is wasting their money on any newspaper, the standard newspapers throughout the country, is wasting their money in contributing to the demise of this country. They should be sending that money into support like your station and other people who, work along similar lines to develop the country. And, because there's a lot more of us than what there are of them, and taken as a collective whole, we are very significant. But we have to be serious, and we have to work in a way that produces a collective effort to achieve the goals of furthering the this country and not bring about its demise.
Yes. Those are good ideas, good thoughts, and you'd be surprised how money can add up.
Mm-hmm.
When you put it aside every week, a couple of bucks here, a couple of bucks there, and you're not wasting it feeding the monster. And, I mean, look at people today, how infatuated they are with cable, with satellite. And they're ordering channels that are furthering the demoralization of our country, turning it into a wasteland of garbage, And yet they could be putting that money into constructive use.
Exactly. Or alcohol or drugs or...
All of those addictions. Yeah.
Everything. Every aspect. I challenge the American people to look at it and ask yourself which direction you want to go and to move accordingly.
Amen to that.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you, Jim. Good thoughts, Eustace.
Yes,
positive thoughts.
Oh, yeah.
And you've lived over enough of a period of time to see the moral decline of our nation, I think, better than most people, haven't you?
Oh, yes. It's catastrophic.
You know, you think of a time when we used McGuffey's readers in school, and now, I won't go so far as to say they'll show the little kiddies Playboy. They'll wait until maybe the 7th or 8th or 10th grade for that. But what they're doing is using educational materials, teaching aids that are dumbing down and retarding the young, as you know. And that's been the plan of the Department of Education for a long time. It's just like drugs and dope, you know. If you want to have a real shortage of dope, then the government should legalize it and establish a full department.
Oh,
and
yes,
there'd be a shortage overnight.
Yes, one of the most famous teachers said a few years ago that when the children started in school the first year from 5 to 6, they were very bright and just had interest in everything. And by the time they're 7 years old, that is gone completely. It's been completely quashed and wiped out forever. It never comes back.
And the drugs are there to prove it, the Ritalin,
that's all part of it.
And now they're encouraging. I was watching the propagandist on NBC the other night and telling us how wonderful it is to get the children vaccinated as quickly as you can and make sure they get their flu shots and go right ahead. Don't be afraid. Nothing to worry about. Just get all the shots you need. There's a cure and a vaccine for virtually everything, including cancer now and sexual problems for young people.
Yeah, and I understand a lot of them are using, they've taught the children to take Ritalin as a drug on the side that don't even need it for their so-called ADD or whatever it is.
ADD, yep.
Yeah.
And, attention deficit disorder, as they call it, which there is no such thing. I agree with one of the writers that his name is John Roseman. He's a very conservative columnist who's deals with psychology and family rearing, and he says it's nothing but addiction to television, and that's why we have this ADD problem with our young. It's a whole generation of TV fanatics. All right, stay where you are, Eustace. Fred will be next, Mike, Maggie, and you at 1-800-313-9443. Rick Adams, be right back.
How dare you call yourselves patriots and heroes? If you say the government is in a conspiracy to take your freedom away, you are just plain wrong. There is no freedom.
Well, there you are. There you have it. Eustace Mullins, my guest, Rick Adams. Let's take Fred in Florida. He's been waiting a long time. Hello, Fred.
Oh, it wasn't that long, gentlemen. It's with a great deal of happiness and joy that I get to speak with Eustace Mullins. One of my heroes I've listened to for a long time. And Eustace, I'd like to say that I think you're one of the founders of the modern truth in government movement here in the United States. And I've listened to you for many years on the various programs that have appeared on shortwave and now on the Internet and the shortwave at the same time. And I've also been able to distribute a copy of your famous book, Secrets of the Federal Reserve, that appeared on the Internet some years ago that I was able to find and download and save. And recently, a gentleman by the name of Aaron Russo made a wonderful movie called America, Freedom to Fascism. I don't know if you're familiar with this movie or
I've been hearing a lot about it, but I've not seen it yet. It's not been shown in my area.
Right. Aaron now is selling copies of the movie on DVD form, and you can actually watch it for free on the Internet if you go to his webpage, America, yes. Freedom of Fascism. Well, I guess correctly, it's freedomtofascism.com.
Oh, yes.
Is the address on the Internet.
Uh-huh.
You can watch a...
Well, that's good. He must be reaching a lot of people with that.
Yes. In fact, after Mr. Russo appeared on a local Tampa-based so-called listener-sponsored community radio station, I circulated a copy of your book, Secrets of the Federal Reserve,
mm-hmm.
which lends a lot of credence to Mr. Russo's movie, which is about the Federal Reserve and the IRS.
Oh, yeah. People ask me why Eric Russo never got in touch with me on that. That's my help on it, but I never heard from him.
I think he, at some time or another, someone had to mention your name, had to mention your book,
well,
Secrets
so.
Of the Federal Reserve, because it has been around for so long, and it's one of the pieces of bedrock of the Patriot Truth movement here in the United States. And the thing that came about of my circulating a copy to people on my email list of your book, Secrets of the Federal Reserve, was that one of the people at the local listener-sponsored community radio station tried to smear you, Eustace, as
oh, really?
a fascist and an anti-Semite.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that old thing. The ADL has been peddling that line ever since I published the book in 1953.
That's correct. I've heard you mention that many times. And the gentleman that smeared you sent a long list of so-called quotes and how you were a follower of Ezra Pound.
Oh, yeah. Well, that means I'm a fascist. The fact that, you know, Lyndon LaRouche denounced me in his paper one time because he said I must be a fascist, but I'm a disciple of Ezra Pound, and he was a fascist. Of course, Pound was never a member of the Fascist Party of Italy. He lived in Italy as a retired poet. He wasn't a part of the government or part of the Fascist Party.
Well, when you start getting attacked by the ADL and Lyndon LaRouche, you know you're doing something right, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
There you go.
Well, that's certainly true. Just look at where it's coming from.
All right, Fred, any other points you wanted to make or questions?
Oh, I wanted to thank Eustace for his lifetime of
yes.
research and service to our country and
Amen.
The Constitution. And I hope that you have many more years of useful service to the American citizens, Eustace, and thank you, and God bless you for all your hard work.
Well, thank you very much. I'm still working 7 days a week, and I'm glad I'm able to do it.
Well,
Amen.
Don't slow down.
Well, thank you, Fred, for your compliments and for your prayers, indeed.
Yes. Thank you, gentlemen, and good night to both of you.
Yes, thank you for your support of the network, support of the movement, and you're one of the children of God here in our country today. That is making a difference, and it's because of people like Fred and our callers, you, Eustace, and others, that I believe God has prolonged America and spared the great judgment because of the work of his saints. And you're one of them, Eustace Mullins. You are.
Oh, thank you very much.
You are one heck of a man, and let me tell you, when I see you with wings, I'm going to be greeting you with a new halo on my head.
All right, well, I look forward to it.
All right, now we got a break.
Am I still with you, Rick?
Yeah. Are you still there, Fred?
Yeah, if I can say one more thing to Eustace before it gets too late. Eustace, I emailed this gentleman back that smeared you as being an anti-Semite and a fascist follower and all this kind of stuff, and I asked him, I said, do you have any information about what Mr. Eustace Mullins writes in his book, Secrets of the Federal Reserve? Do you have any information about what part of it is incorrect? And I got no response from the gentleman.
Well, you won't, because nobody's ever challenged one word in that book. It was written from official government reports at the Library of Congress in Washington.
There's the answer, Fred.
That's the bottom
All
line,
right.
gentlemen.
Amen. Okay, we'll be right back. And I got a couple of updates on news and what you're coming, obviously, Eustace. And we'll get right to our calls, Mike, Maggie, Alan, and you.
uncensored, Radio Free America, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
Well, there he goes again. Got it from the horse's mouth this time. Eustace, here's an item here I want to get your reaction to. The new Treasury Secretary, Mr. Paulson, has made his first visit to Red China as Treasury Secretary, and he's just come back, and he's had a report for Congress. Now, listen to this. During his visit with congressmen, he met with Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, Republican, and Chuckie Schumer, Democrat from New York, who had introduced a proposal levying, listen to this, a 27% duty on all red Chinese merchandise entering the United States. It had been kept over the heads of the red Chinese for months, hoping something could be worked out. What do you think Paulson does? He requests that the above two men that are mentioned here, that's Schumer and Graham, drop their bill, and they did so promptly. In the meantime, the request for a revaluation upward in the Chinese currency has occurred to a very minimal extent. It has risen from 8.2 yuan per dollar to, I think it's 7.9 per dollar, and the rise of 0.3% is totally unsatisfactory. I just thought I'd mention that to you. Isn't that another example?
The Chinese are not cooperating at all in revaluing the yuan.
Why should they? They're in the driver's seat here with the Treasury bills.
Yes, indeed.
Indeed. And here's another thing from the Boston Globe, by the way. They reported the federal government printing office had ordered libraries across the country to destroy the Department of Justice pamphlets that provide how-to instructions on prosecuting asset forfeiture cases. The Globe stated the Justice was invoking a rarely used authority affecting libraries across the United States. Such pamphlets are among the materials the office sends each year to about 1,300 depository libraries. Now, there are probably two in each congressional district and are designated by Congress to receive and make available virtually all these government documents that they publish. The action obviously relates to the planned confiscation of gold, in the opinion of some. It is assumed by Justice Gonzalez that many citizens will go to court to fight the confiscation effort. One of the ways in which attorneys would handle such a case is to check what current procedures are used by the federal government to prosecute their response to legal challenges involving gold forfeiture. So obviously, they are doing some book burning right now, if this is indeed the case on the Boston Globe. There you are. All right, let's take more calls. Mike in Texas. Hi, you're on with Eustace Mullins.
Hey, Rick. Hi, Eustace. I'm sorry to say I never heard of you before tonight.
Well, there you go. You learn something new every day, Mike.
I'm not a college graduate or anything, but I was wondering if you... first of all, I'd like to say that there's a verse from one of my favorite books. It says, the love of money is the root of all evil. So if we get at the root, then we can take care of the evil.
As far as you go to the root.
The biggest problem is, how do you get there? You know.
Well, that's an individual decision, Mike.
Right. So each one of us doing our part is a little more chipping away at the root, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I also wanted to ask Mr. Mullins about that book that I mentioned last week, None Dare Call It Conspiracy.
Yes.
By Gary Allen with Larry Abraham.
Right.
I was just wondering if y'all were associated in some way.
Oh, I was associated with Gary. In fact, Gary Allen admitted that he was inspired to write his book about my book on the Federal Reserve.
Ah. And I also
his widow wrote me that after he died. She said, my husband often refers to the fact that he had been originally inspired by your book, to write his book, none dare call it conspiracy.
And he wasn't the only one that was inspired to write based on your work.
I think there was about a dozen, actually.
Yeah.
I also understand now, I used to go visit my grandmother when she was still alive, and I understand now why she had such an attitude about the government. I didn't at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a real bad attitude about the Pinkertons. And she was a union member for an airline way mm-hmm. back then. And
yes.
It was horrible, and I didn't realize how bad it was until after she was gone.
Oh, Pinkerton was always a union buster, wasn't he?
Right.
Oh, yeah, he was hired by the big corporation.
And also, I remember what my grandmother would tell me when we would talk about the Depression. And my neighbor here, he's 81, he talks about it once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But she said, just because the government says it can never happen again doesn't mean sheet. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And she used to say that, and I really didn't understand fully what she was talking about.
Well, usually that means the government is planning to do it again.
Right.
When they say it's not going to happen, watch out.
And, you know, we've already had some downs, and it looks like a big down coming.
Well, again, like Lindbergh said, the Federal Reserve is the engine of destruction. And once you've got it in place, it's over. It will create depression, it will create artificial euphoria, it will create booming times, quote-unquote, and it will create busts. It's all artificially engineered, he said.
Well, it seems like I've been struggling all my life.
Well, you're not the only one, Mike. You're struggling,
the whole country.
yeah, you know, if you're honest, you're struggling, put it that way.
All right. Well, God bless you all.
Thank you. Bless you, too. And there's a heartfelt thought there from somebody who indeed is a good... hard-working American. And, you know, it's like that rodent on that treadmill, like Carl Klang says in his song. You keep moving, but you're not getting anywhere. And that's what the Federal Reserve System does. And it is a totally diabolical system, as far as I'm concerned, Eustace.
Oh, yes. It beats everybody down, keeps everybody down.
And you'll get the money changers right in the Temple of Washington, don't we?
Oh, yes. And, you know, Jesus... was crucified because he drove the money changers out of the temple.
He didn't mince any words with them. He knew who they were.
Goes back a long ways.
And they are the same people today in
the
control.
Same people,
yes,
absolutely.
Indeed. All right, Maggie in Texas is next on the program. Hi, Maggie.
Hi. I'm honored to have the opportunity to ask the question of Mr. Mullins.
Sure.
I would like to know whether he has heard the Leo Wanta story, and if so, what he thinks of it.
The Leo Wanta story.
Yes,
I don't know. Have you heard of this case, Eustace?
No, I haven't heard of that one. I hear horror stories all the time, but I don't know that one.
Tell us a little bit about it, Maggie.
Oh, Rick, do you know about it?
No, I'll be honest with you. I haven't heard of it. Maybe I have, but it slipped my mind. I don't know.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit.
I'm not sure I'm up to properly articulating it. There is a story circulating that has gained some traction. It's put forth by certain broadcasters, not just one.
Oh, okay.
The one in particular. This concerns a man named Leo Wanta. First name Leo, last name W-A-N-T-A.
Mm-hmm.
A distinctive name. He should be easy to find stuff out about. Now, what is known about him for sure, or what I'm convinced is true, is that he really exists. He was active during Reagan's administration as some sort of an operative. He had something. He's a financier, that type of person. He had something to do with destabilizing the Russian currency, and he's had various strange little ambassadorial appointments that I really do not understand at all. It's like he was given temporary titles in order for him to conduct whatever strange business he was conducting. And
mm-hmm.
The countries were African countries. I forget which precisely. None of it made too much sense if you don't understand these matters. Now, what is claimed for him is that he has somehow been given fiduciary access to trillions of dollars that are owed to the American people and that were stolen through a particular bank group, which I cannot recall the name of right now. It's very detailed. And to me, of course, this story is absurd on the face of it, that so much could rest upon one man, even if he had the financial powers that are claimed for him. But as I say, the story has gained a certain amount of traction. It comes up now and then, and I'm just wondering if it's not true, who is putting it out and what they have to gain. And I don't think the broadcasters have made it up. They have picked it up. They're researching it. They're taking it seriously.
All right. Let me look into it and see what I can find.
I would love it if you did that.
Leo Wanta.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We'll see what we can come up with. If anybody knows, you're welcome to join the club and give us some more information. We depend on that all the time. Thank you, Maggie.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you. I think she's a first-time caller. We've had quite a few every night. And we're grateful for them, Eustace. And,
oh, yes, indeed.
By the way, before we take the next call, Eustace, people who are listening now would love to communicate with you again. How can they do that? What's the best way and the best for you in particular?
You could write to me directly at my home address, 126 Madison Place.
Madison Place. You said 126 Madison Place.
That's right. In Stratford, again, 24401.
All right. And it's Stratford, did you say, or Stanton?
Stanton.
Stanton, Virginia. Okay.
It's the birthplace of Woodrow Wilson.
Right. Well, I know that's another fine distinction, right?
Yes, certainly.
And your zip code, again, was
24401.
Okay. 24401.
And that'll reach me every time.
Excellent, excellent. And what about the Internet? Do you have a way people can reach you directly on the Internet or by email?
I'm getting my computer set up now. In fact, I just got a printer the other day.
Oh, good.
Printer.
All right.
So I'm really moving into that. That'll be done in the next few weeks.
Well, when we have you on again next month, then we'll be able maybe to do that. All right.
Oh, yes. Good. I think we'll be set up that time.
All right. And let's talk to Alan in Texas now. Hello, Alan. You're next.
Hello, Rick, and hello, Eustace.
Hello.
I just wrote down your address because I ordered five DVD copies of Freedom to Fascism today in support of Republic Broadcasting.
And you're going to send one to Eustace, are you?
That's what I want to do, and I wrote down your address.
I've been looking forward to it.
So you and your friends can have some popcorn and maybe a Pepsi and sit down and really enjoy that.
Yes, we'll really start.
Do you have DVD? You have a DVD player, Eustace?
Oh, yes.
Okay, good.
Good. Well, the main reason I called Eustace, and I became aware and woken up maybe 5 years ago from listening to the radio broadcasts, and have become very active in the last 2 or 3 years. And right now we're working here in Texas to eliminate electronic voting machines. And anybody who's active out here in the on these things, we're constantly confronted with apparent defeats and disappointments. And when I listen to you talk, and you've been at this for so many decades, and you still have such an optimistic outlook that and your attitude stays up and mm-hmm. So I took down your address also that I can stay in communication, because I mean there's times that I think we really need a lift from someone like you that
he is an inspiration, no doubt about it.
And I've heard you talk before, and you mentioned, you know, an optimistic outlook for the future of America once we, you know, come out of this dark age that we're in right now. And I really need to hear about that again, having suffered some defeats in the work down here lately. And,
I have a book on that called A Writ for Martyrs, which details federal crimes committed against American citizens. It's quite a book.
A Writ for Martyrs.
Yes, A Writ for Martyrs.
You have quite a few books. You have quite a few copies of certain books. Maybe we can arrange to give away some, too, on the program, Eustace, and get you more publicity and help RBN, too. We'll do something like that.
All right.
We'll work something out with you.
Is that a book that you have, Eustace?
Do you have any in supply?
I have a good supply of those.
Okay.
I never promoted that book. It's a very important book, but I had so many others. I just sort of let it slide. But people are very impressed by it. In fact, a lady just bought a case of them in California, and she's distributing to them to people.
Now, did you tell me that you had about, 10,000 books of Secrets of the Federal Reserve?
Oh, yes.
You have that many left?
Uh-huh. Well, the last printing I did was I printed 100,000, which is unheard of for a person to print an old book to print that quantity.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a good printer, and I went ahead and did it, and that's why I still have copies today.
A soft-bound edition, right?
Oh, hardbound edition.
Oh, hardbound.
Oh, yeah.
My, that's even more expensive. All right, so that's available. Now, if people wanted to order anything like that from you right now, could they pay for it? How much would it be?
Oh, well, the current price is $40 and $2 shipping.
Uh-huh.
But
All right. I
have a copy. In fact, I've been sending out, I sent out quite a few copies just to pay for
it. It's priceless. It is a priceless volume.
Well,
you're not going to find it on your
book. It's a useful book that you can work from.
Well, you're not going to find it on the shelves of most libraries. That's
No, indeed, never.
Okay, Alan?
It's never been in libraries. It's never been in bookstores.
There you go.
And how about the price on a writ for martyrs, Eustace? Should I pop an extra 10 or 15 bucks in the envelope?
It's also $40. I
okay.
think my nephew's handling my book sales.
Oh, I see.
The price up a little bit because they're bringing up to $400 a piece for paperback.
Wow.
Used
books,
right?
And these are new books,
and
too.
These are new books. That's
brand new,
copies, and I sign them when I send them out.
Good.
Well, thank you so much, Eustace. We really appreciate you and look forward to you being back, and I hope you can come back more often.
Well, I'm right here.
Thank you. Very good. Thank you, Alan, for your support, too. All right, let's see if we can. We're going to take a break because we're up against the clock, and we've got Gary hanging on in Texas, and we'll take him when we come back. We got about a minute before the break, and you see, Eustace, how fast time goes by when you're having so much fun.
Hours I ever saw.
It is. It's amazing, isn't it? Right. All right. And we'll continue to have you on. I think we'd like to have you on every month. I mean, gee whiz, once a month is not really that much when you think about it.
Not at all.
And you're such a resource for us. And as I said to people, maybe who weren't listening before, you were there. You've been there, done that. So you didn't write from anybody else's book. You were there and you lived through this era. All right, stay there. We'll be right back with Gary in Texas, and we'll be wrapping up in just a few moments. Stay tuned for more. I'm Rick Adams. Now, the final few moments of the program with Eustace Mullins, our guest, and let us go to the phones again and talk to Gary in Texas. Hi, Gary.
Hi, good evening. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you, sir.
Good. My respect to both of you. I was looking on Amazon at some of the books that Eustace has published, and I noticed that there's one called The Condemned Generation from 1954.
Mm-hmm.
And another one called The Curse of Canaan, which, by the way, is on sale for only $1,000.
Wow.
Well, that book is very much in demand. It's out of print, but out of print for like 4 years. And it's gone up to $1,000. It's a great book. It's the history of demonology and civilization.
Are these books still available from you directly?
That one has been out of print for about 4 years. But I'm going to get it printed after the first year.
So it will be available again, you think?
Oh, yes,
Curse of Canaan? Okay.
Oh, yes.
I'm very, very interested in filling my library full of your books, and I've got a couple of them already.
Well, that's one of the most important ones, and it really, I get calls for it every day.
Let me ask you, Eustace, how many in all, how many did you write?
15.
15 books, and now you say you're working on how many now, 30 or 40?
I have 38 more to do.
Okay, all right. Hey, that's ambitious.
Oh, I have my work cut out for me.
You do. And, Gary, do you have another question or comment?
No, I just encourage him just to keep trucking, keep going.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we admire you. Yes, we do admire Eustace. He doesn't quit. He's 85, and he's got more energy than most people I know under 25. I'll tell you that.
Well, God bless and keep going. Good night.
Thank you. Amen. Thank you very much, Gary. And do we have another call? No? That's it, I think. Is that right, Manny? Okay, good. That's a good way to end. Give you time, Eustace. Give your address again. People who'd like to write to you, just write a letter to you, and whatever it is they want to order a book, fine. Then you answer all of your mail as you can get on with it, and obviously take some time.
Immediately.
Good for you. All right, if you get a whole deluge from this program, then we understand it may take a little bit of time to get an answer, but Eustace will be working overtime to do that. What's your address again, Eustace Mullins?
126 Madison Place, Stanton, Virginia. 24401.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. It's that simple. And Eustace, I want to take this time to thank you again for being with us again. And we will, God willing, we'll plan on it again next month.
Oh, we certainly will.
In November. Thank you, Eustace. Bless you. Stay well, and we'll talk to you soon.
Very good.
Thank you. All right. Good night, Eustace.
Good night.
Thank you. Well, you know, that's 2 hours just flying by. Tomorrow and I are going to get into some of these questions by Kevin Franz, 73 questions he has for you, for elected officials. And then Friday night we are going to be speaking with a gentleman who, of course, is going to deal, Kurt Hyde is his name, he's going to deal with the issue of saving our elections and our election system, if that can be done. So don't be shy. Join in, spread the word, support RBN, rbnlive.com, and get on the website. If you're not there now, get on right away. Spread the word. Listen to us on shortwave. Listen to us every way you can. Support your station. Support rbnlive.com, spiritually, in prayer, and monetarily if you can. Good night, everybody. Rick Adams. God willing, see you tomorrow.